Hello, my name is Keith Larson, Content Director for Endeavor B2B's Engineering Design and Automation Group. You're listening to a Solution Spotlight episode of the Control Amplified podcast, sponsored today by Honeywell Process Automation. Today I'm coming to you live from the 50th anniversary Honeywell Users Group meeting in Phoenix, Arizona, where I'm joined by Russ Ford, Honeywell President of Projects and Automation Solutions, to discuss modular approaches to energy resilience and how they can help industrial organizations protect themselves from production interruptions. Thanks so much for joining me here today, Russ, and for sharing your perspective with our listeners. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me here today. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Well, let's start up front. You know, why are so many organizations suddenly focused on energy resilience, and what's really driving that urgency now versus, you know, a couple of years ago?
I think it's a few things. I think, you know, there's been some things going on and happening in the world that are highlighting that, you know, mm-hmm. energy independence is important for mm-hmm. facilities. Our grid's getting older and That's under for sure. a lot more demand. And, you know, I think the other thing is the cost of these solutions is really coming down. I think these were really large project undertakings a few years ago, but the work that everybody's been doing has meant that, you know, the solutions are quicker to get implemented and mm-hmm. costing, you know, they're less CapEx intensive than they used to be.
Now, when you say modular solutions, what does that actually mean in practice, and really, why is that approach so important?
Yeah, we really find that, you know, getting the cost and repeatability of the solutions is important. You know, it allows for manufacturing efficiencies. And when I think modular, I kind of use the Lego block analogy, right? Okay. It's sort of, you know, if you've got certain sizes, certain fixed kind of configurations for mm-hmm. these resilient systems, both in terms of the automation and the actual, say, if you're using battery energy storage mm-hmm. systems. You know, a lot of the world manufacturers now have standardized on 20-foot containers or have standardized on kind of certain products. Yeah. So, you know, coming up with solutions where you can say, hey, I need 8 containers here, or I need 10, or I need 200 containers, mm-hmm. Is really allowing us to, you know, design one, build many, get things repeatable, do less custom engineering and do more deployment. It's making maintenance, sparing, and operations just a lot easier. And it's also providing the kind of case where a customer might look and say, hey, for this first phase, I want to deploy this much in terms of capacity, and then coming up, I want to add more later. Maybe I'm going to start with some backup generation from what, and then I'm going to come in later and add batteries. Like, it just it provides more kind of flexibility in the solution while not requiring so much bespoke design work every time.
Yeah. With all of the pressure on the grid and other sources of energy, how much for industrial operations do you see companies putting in a more of a microgrid approach to their own generation and maybe selling some excess back to the grid, similar to what a data center might do? Do you see that happening much in the industrial space, or is that increasing as well?
Yeah, we're seeing some of that for sure. I think for a lot of customers, the driver is reliability, and the driver is just that never having downtime and not having to rely on that. Those behind-the-meter type solutions where you're kind of working across a microgrid give a lot more flexibility in operations. And then we're actually starting to talk with some customers about maybe like virtual power plant solutions where you could sort of say, hey, maybe a trading company wants to come in and say, I'd like to be able to reach across all of these assets in a time of demand. And you sign up to that demand response program, and all of a sudden, like, the cost of operating those assets, it's offset somewhat by maybe you're getting this, you know, some revenue coming in from it. You still see a lot of customers that are effectively doing arbitrage around energy pricing too, right? So, you know, charge when the prices are low, discharge when it's high. And we're seeing in a lot of markets, you know, the incentives to do that have really resulted in a more stable grid, large utility scale buildouts. There's always this kind of different use case. I think where we see a lot of it recently is just these large mission critical, you know, customers that really can't afford to be down or relying on external power are really saying, hey, I've got options to keep things up and running. And then, you know, the revenue byproduct is kind of a nice sort of adder, but it's not really driving the investment.
Yeah. I'm really intrigued by some of the nuclear options, you know, the small modular nuclear reactors that, you know, have that sustainability advantage. I know that's not it's not an in-fashion term nowadays, but I think it's still important. What's your outlook on those kind of technologies? How fast are they coming at us?
Yeah, they're not coming at us fast enough as far as I'm
concerned. Not fast enough, okay, that's good to hear.
I think that the obstacles in small modular nuclear reactors are not technological.
Okay.
And it's interesting.
That's probably true.
You know, we have some customers we're working with, and you can kind of find out a little bit more if you look into it. But they'll tell you that the closer you get to some of these facilities, the less concerned people are about living near them, right?
Yeah.
And these SMNRs now, these large scale problems are just don't exist, right? And, it's becoming a lot more cost effective. I think that becomes the challenge, is how do you drive the economics quicker? And then how do you build a regulatory framework? How do you start to get that so that those, that they can be more agile? Because these companies that are investing in that space and developing technology in that space, they have a tremendous amount of commitment and a tremendous amount of, commitment to seeing it come through and to really become a meaningful part of the, the grid. And I think there are a number of places where that solution it doesn't rely on, variations through the day. It's a lot more, immune to weather. Like, there's just a ton of things that really make it compelling. So I really am hopeful we'll see it coming to, coming to fruition well before 2040. And there are customers that would like to see it before 2030. I mean,
I mean, the technology has proven, we've been driving submarines with them for decades.
Yeah.
So there's really not that not that much to do.
It's there's no Star Wars
It's just it's just the acceptance of the idea. I think.
And a good regulatory framework. I think people are concerned, and so let's rallying behind it will be important.
So back to really what's doable today. What industries or segments are really getting the most value from these, what's available now to modular solutions that you're, that Honeywell's involved with?
The easiest one that comes to mind is data centers, right? So data centers are obviously, they're high throughput. There's a lot of demand for power, and they can't afford to say, power will be back on in 10 minutes. It's like, that doesn't work for
a
data center.
They tend to stress the grid if there's a grid in place.
Correct, right? And so I think that independence, that resilience is a critical factor there. But we're also seeing it from other customers as well. And I think, when we think about the criticality, you look at a life sciences or a pharmaceutical manufacturer that's making some of these modern GLP-1 medications, and the business case for being up and meeting production requirements to meet demand in the market for these drugs is massive. So there's actually a really compelling offering there to sort of say, hey, you know, you put this in, and if you suffer two power interruptions, three power interruptions, all of a sudden it's like, oh, this is making up for that, right? And these solutions we have today, you know, whether you want to measure them in a dollars per kilowatt hour or dollars per uptime, however you want to kind of think about it, they're just really providing a really meaningful backup now. And they're not that difficult to maintain. They're not that difficult to, you know, they're not these massive capital undertakings that there used to be. And so, we're seeing that. We're also seeing them come in places where you might have solar power available, but that solar fluctuates a lot. And so, like, we've gone in some communities and put in batteries to be able to just provide more stable power to the grid and to provide 2 hours, 3 hours of power after the sun goes down. So
just kind of smooth everything out.
Provide more reliable power for communities. So even some utility customers are starting to invest in them for those reasons. And then again, you've got customers that are looking at it saying, hey, I can, and there's some really fascinating, opportunities using, whether it's thermal storage or whether it's using compressing air and decompressing it afterwards. Yeah. There's a lot of different energy storage mechanisms that are really out there. And I think as they become a more integrated part of our, our infrastructure, you see a lot more of them.
So if an organization doesn't, your last answer kind of prompts this idea, is when somebody commits to this sort of solution, how do they justify it or measure the payback on that investment, which of course everybody is trying to do all the time before they make the decision? Is it really the number of outages that they avoid, or is there other metrics that you attach to it?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I always say, like, the why of a project is critical, right? Yeah. And especially when you think about automation and all this stuff, it's like, well, what benefit, what business value am I getting out of it? I think for every customer it's different. As you said, if you're operating in a place where you don't have that grid stability, or maybe you're suffering a few outages a year, it could be uptime. Could be, 10, 12, 15 less hours down per year. And what is that worth to
them? Several million dollars.
Could be several million dollars in a real hurry if a lot of these facilities. I think there's other places where, the benefit would be making sure that power is available when market rates are justifying it. But we really try to focus on, most of these are about ROI at the end of the day, right? If there's no meaningful ROI, it's difficult to say, hey, I want to do these projects because And what we're really trying to do with a lot of the automation technology is to say, hey, how do we help you make sure that you recognize the ROI? So a lot of our automation solutions can be focused on, you know, what is that business benefit? How are you monetizing that asset? And then really working with the data coming from the asset and your own business to mm-hmm. really bring those together and say, you know, how do you make sure you're getting the most out of that, the best return on those assets over time? Because, you know, for some of these places, it's a great insurance policy. Mm-hmm. But even in that case, you should still be able to look and say, hey, you know, over the course of however long, it really made sense to have these in place.
So speaking of automation, certainly, you know, Honeywell is increasingly focusing on automation, process automation, as well as some other key aspects. What role does automation really play in these? There's obviously more than just automation in these solutions. What role does that play in making it even more effective or more cost effective, or what role does it play?
So I think automation, first of all, has to make sure that the asset works when it's supposed to, right? So the kind of table stakes is just a good, responsive system that's easy to operate and maintain, particularly mm-hmm. if the primary purpose of these things is to be an insurance policy or a backup. You don't want to have to be spending all your time, you know, playing with them, right? So I think there's a lot to be said about just being good, a good, strong, reliable automation that makes mm-hmm. it work. Where we're really finding some interesting opportunities to come in with some digital solutions over the top, where you can really say things like, hey, maybe there's a virtual power plant type thing for some of these battery energy storage systems. And so that sort of digital automation or some of those digital solutions can help you get extra value out of the asset, can start to predict when certain parts, if you're using an asset that you're cycling all the time, hey, we're seeing, you know, that maybe this part of the system is taking longer to charge, or maybe, you know, is less responsive. We're seeing some temperature fluctuations. Maybe it's time to, like, you know, get in and balance your system a little bit earlier. Maybe it's time to kind of start to plan for the next phase of whether it's augmentation or replacement of certain parts of it. So just, you know, reducing, being more predictive about any of the maintenance that you need to do, which should reduce the cost of that maintenance, which again should help with the ROI. And also making sure that, like, hey, if everything's working really well and everything here has really come together, then maybe there isn't a need to get in and start doing replacement and augmentation. So just, you know, I think so often we plan around degradation curves for batteries, or we plan around maintenance cycles from an OEM. But the automation and data used well can help you get a lot more specific about your assets and really say, hey, what are the things that I should be looking at for maintenance? What should my maintenance program look like? And and again, it just boils down to, like we've been talking about, how do you make sure that you're really getting the best business benefit out of these assets?
So how much activity is Honeywell seeing in terms of retrofits on existing industrial facilities versus a greenfield site that, that wants to include that with the new project? Do you have a sense of the mix?
I think we're seeing probably a little bit of both, for sure. I think the new facilities in place in things like data centers and lifestyle, the business case is so robust that I think you're seeing that in a lot of places. And then I think in that IPP market, where customers are able to come in and say, hey, maybe I've got solar generation and I want to add batteries, maybe that's like a bit of a, you know, a brownfield adaptation. And then we are seeing some of these kind of like spinning reserve type campaigns, where maybe you can go in and instead of having this type of energy backup, maybe you could have something else. If you're getting to a point where a gas turbine is reaching end of life, or you're just not using it very often, and maybe that asset has a lot more value on the open market running at 80% of the time, a lot of this equipment likes to be run, right? It doesn't want to sit idle. And so, you know, you get more flexibility out of some of these other systems. They're probably more fit for different applications. So we are getting called in there a little bit. But I think predominantly for us right now, you know, the AI data center supercycle is driving a ton of demand here. That microgrid trend that you were talking about before, I think you know, it's fascinating how much power that's produced is actually lost on the grid, right? And so if you're producing it locally, you're going to be more efficient, right? And so there is some of that, you know, we get called in there quite a bit as well.
So there's plenty of driving factors bringing us forward, because one thing's for sure is that electricity has kind of become the lingua franca for energy going forward, more and more as a common way to address our energy problems.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. And I think when you think globally, what's so interesting about the world today is every market, every customer, every geography sort of has a different dynamic around that, right? Yeah. Like how they generate energy, how they trade energy, what they do with it. It's just, yeah. That's what makes our business so fascinating is what you're getting called to do in a, you know, a facility in Texas might be very different than what you're getting called to do in a, somewhere in India might be very different than what you're getting called to do in Germany. So it's a, it's a really, you know, it's a really broad, broad solution.
And fascinating. Yeah. Absolutely. Really appreciate you taking the time to share your perspectives with us. Again, this is Keith Larson, and you've been listening to a Control Amplified podcast with my guest today, Russ Ford, President of Projects and Automation Solutions with Honeywell.
Thanks for having me, Keith. Appreciate it.
Congrats once again, too, on the 50th anniversary of the Honeywell User Group here, and best wishes for continued success.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Appreciate you having us.